Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday, May 16th, and this is Jeff Dunphy, and the show is Retooling for Our Coming of Age. We are speaking today of global political, mineral, and economic issues and items. We will stand aside of the true definitive esoteric for a brief moment, and we shall start to investigate a little more of what is currently happening on the globe. One of the laws that we speak of often is the law of correspondence and how it represents itself and how it, when it is described to people who haven't looked at things that way, how it becomes very evident to them of what is going on. As somebody has coined the phrase, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. We have the usual suspects. We have the Americans, we have the Europeans, and then we have the players in the Americans and the Europeans. We have the Russians playing right now. We have the Chinese playing right now. And we have a whole plethora of things unfolding in an odd and peculiar way. The markets are doing very strange things. They are still climbing because the printing of money, if you will, is continuing. They are not stopping this down because they're terrified that the markets are going to decline. The price of gold, it would appear, is sitting and maintaining itself around the $1,300 mark. However, I want to chat a little about headlines in the gold game, and I think I do believe that there's a very, very bright horizon for precious metal prices. But that light has yet to arrive. Let us say that it will arrive in 2, 3, 4 months, probably at the last part of the summer, mid-August. There's been some interesting events happen in the demise of the London gold fix, as it were. I think what's happened is in the fallout from the LIBOR fix, in the fallout of the interest rate fix, where all of these banks are being slapped on the hands with potentially $1 billion of fines, they are the scrutiny over which the London silver and gold fix has been put has shown that those players who were responsible for the London gold fix are now starting to resign. They're now starting to jump off the ship. This gives us food for thought because I suspect there is a point in time where their contingency plans will become more and more evident to those who have the diligence to sort of read between the lines, and also for those who have the diligence to ask the right and hard questions. I think prices, as our friend who's actually been on this show, Jim Rogers, has said over the last couple of visits he's had, I think prices, he thought prices were going to drop for the next year, and he said that about a year ago. And I think they probably will start dropping in a serious way, okay? So there's four separate price time and trend patterns that include an expectation that prices fall first before it takes on an upside in a big way. My apologies, my dog was just barking there. And these patterns are supported by seasonal ups and downs. And typically gold prices fall in the summer and then start turning up sometime in August. There's an adage in the trading game of sell in May and go away and come back in September, and away you go. So for anyone who has savings to deploy in the metals, the setup is ideal. You should get lower prices over the next couple of months, and an expectation that your buying will start in a major price rally. That is, the prices available over the next several weeks should be quite a bargain relative to where I believe, and many others as well, who are far smarter than I, believe the price is going to go. And for those of you who already own gold, and trusting that you bought gold at or around these prices, I suspect, as Jim Rogers has said, he has sold no gold And what he's waiting for is the next couple of months for the price of gold to fall so that he can accumulate more. You'll need to be patient here, but as implied above, a price drop dead ahead will be an elegant completion of a major recognizable patterns. And these patterns all clearly indicate that a bull market in metals that started early in this century still has many years to run, and that the best upward movement is in front of us. And it lends itself to an evaluation of the economies, the military, the monetary, and just generally the malaise in the world at this point in time. Now, we could be wrong. A war could break out in 10 minutes in Russia and the Ukraine, and there could be some kind of military action in and around China over various things. There's some riots in Vietnam going on with the Chinese owners of various plants and places in Vietnam. There is unrest everywhere. And so my venue here is keeping the emotions out of what is going on and accumulating gold, because I do generally know that gold is a wealth protection mechanism. And I absolutely know that the powers that be understand that owning gold and silver is vital in order to facilitate this. Now, I want to talk a little about the grand scheme of things, and then I want to relate the economy, politics, and the powers that be all over the planet and how they play in that game. And so we are going to wander into what is called the yugas, or the kalpas, that was given us by some of the wise sages in the past, and what it represents. So we have been shown years ago to, there is what has been referred to as a day of Brahma, and the day of Brahma, or a kalpa, is 4,320,000 years, and which are separated into four yugas, or four cycles. So the Satya, which would be the first or golden age, the Tretya would be the second or silver age, the Dvapara would be the third or bronze age, and the Kali yuga would be the last or iron age. So as we've heard throughout history, and certainly throughout our fairy tales and throughout mythology, there are golden ages and they fall away from alignment. They fall away from their peak of awareness, from their consciousness, from their being and aligning themselves with their purpose, with their meaning, with the well-being of all. As we carry on the word of as go we, so go I. So a kalpa is a day of Brahma, and one day of Brahma consists of 1,000 cycles of four of these yugas. The cycle of Satya is characterized by virtue, wisdom, and religion, there being practically no ignorance and vice, and this yuga lasts 1,728,000 years of the 4,300,000, so it predominates. The golden age in this regard is larger than all the other ages. In the Tretya Yuga, vice is introduced. So now the bloom has come off the rose. Now you see a bit of evil or a bit of selfishness. And this is the fall from grace that's been made reference to. And in this yuga, it lasts 1,296,000 years. And in the Dvapara Yuga, there's an even greater decline in virtue and vice. And consequently, good and evil, if you will, the light and the dark, they balance each other out, and there is conflict abounding. And sometimes evil wins and sometimes good wins. And finally, in the Kali Yuga, the yuga that we have now been experiencing over the past many thousands of years, there is an abundance of strife, ignorance, irreligion, and vice, and true virtue being practically non-existent. Now, this yuga lasts, of the 4,320,000 years, 432,000 years. And in Kali Yuga, vice increases to such a point that at the termination of this era or cycle, the Supreme Lord himself appears as the Kalki Avatara and vanquishes the demon, saves his devotees, and starts another cycle. Then the process is set rolling again. We leave the Iron Age and the Golden Age comes in. Now, from what has been written and certainly what we see and certainly what I've been studying now for decades, we have a time and era where the selfishness is so profound in the economies, in the political systems, in the military systems, that it has become into and around the tipping point. And I don't say this lightly, and I haven't said it lightly. We've got the law of acceleration coming in. We've got bank-run agendas that are violating the very fabric of our economies. We have politicians doing whatever, whenever, however they can in order to stay in power. And then we have television programs, for example, The House of Cards, which personifies this and glorifies this as the nasty evilness that happens inside U.S. politics. And we have a complete and utter departure of harmonious, high-minded, and high-minded has a lovely intonation, and that is aligned with something of a bigger way, manner of living. We have a dog-eat-dog, everybody's in it for themselves, and yet those who have had the power and those who have accumulated the wealth over this time frame have done so in a manner that the tables are ever more skewed in their favor, so that we see those people who honor the political system through graft, if you will. It would be called graft in less developed countries than in the first world countries. But those who buy political influence and do so in a manner that is increasingly underhanded in order to skew the system for their agenda. Now, that being said, the antithesis of that would be a great sage, whomever you should choose to name here, plug a name in, a great sage wishes for all to benefit. So his agenda is for the one and the many, which are one, to benefit from goodness and kindness and grace. And what happens is as these misaligned individuals accumulate more and more wealth, their predisposition to perpetuating it and keeping it going becomes more and more self-serving, lower self-serving. And consequently, they want to make sure that they are the ones that write the rules. They are the ones that facilitate the game. They want to make the rules of the game and they want to play the game. And this is where we get the phrase gaming the system. Now, there was a guy named Abramovich on 60 Minutes some time ago, but he was talking about how his firm, he was sentenced to prison for political influence, political peddling, but how his firm actually managed to organize the creation of bills in Parliament, not in Parliament so much, but in the U.S. Senate and Congress, but in the political system of the Americans, how they managed to organize bills in a manner very sneakily and very definitively with their influence. And so what would happen is that a politician, once Abramovich got his hooks into them by promising him something down the road, so now the agenda of the politician was compromised. And what he suggested in this 60-minute special was how the second he knew that congressman or that senator had an expectation to gain fiscal advantage through a work with Abramovich and his firm, he knew that he could use that politician to define and organize and redirect policy, public policy. So no longer was the politician looking out for the constituents. No longer was the politician being preoccupied for the benefit of all. He was now preoccupied with what he was going to get out of it. And no more egregious explanation or illustration of the phrase, what's in it for me? And so Consequently, when a legislation went to the House and was read, it would be done in two ways. It would be done in a way that nobody would understand what it said anyways, but the politician that was inspired to get it passed. And two, when it actually went to the various committees that it was supposed to be vetted by, perused by, studied by, what really indeed happened is that it went to the lobbying groups, and the lobbying groups would organize that and change the actual legislation that then got put before the House. So consequently, it was the unbelievable gaming of the system. And Abramovich came out and actually spilled it all on 60 Minutes. It was quite interesting. So now here's something that presents itself right now relative to the internet, which I trust, and I could not more rigorously implore you to take action over. And I want to read something to you that has happened reasonably recent about the social beneficent discrimination of the internet. Okay. So if the Obama administration's U.S. Federal Communications Commission has its way, the websites of rich companies and large corporations will work fabulously well on the web, and the sites of everyone else will work poorly or not at all. What better way to enshrine the status quo than by giving available internet broadband width to rich corporations and denying it to everyone else? What better way to grace our minds with only the right opinions and news and censor dissent, inconvenient content, and those pesky conspiracy theories that keep turning out to be true? That's what the FCC is proposing, the end of what's called net neutrality, under which all websites have equal access to internet bandwidth. Now, interestingly, in a piece that Bill Moyers has put, and with a couple of experts on this venue, Obama repeatedly stated his support for net neutrality while campaigning. However, talk about the way what politicians say and what they actually do. So in late January of 14, Obama appeared in a Google Hangout session as part of a virtual whistle-stop tour in response to a net neutrality question. He said, "It's something that I've cared deeply about ever since I ran for office, in part because my own campaign was empowered by a free and open internet and the ability for citizens all across the country to engage and create and find new ways, new tools to mobilize themselves. A lot of that couldn't have been done if there was a lot of commercial barriers and roadblocks, so I've been a strong supporter of net neutrality." So the problem is that, in typical fashion, the Obama administration has stacked the upper echelons of the FCC with people formerly paid by internet service providers and who are now known attackers of net neutrality. Now, one of which would be a guy named Daniel Alvarez, who's a lawyer, who has long represented Comcast. Now, Alvarez wrote a letter to the FCC on behalf of Comcast protesting net neutrality rules, arguing that regulators failed to appreciate socially beneficial discrimination. There we come again. What the end of net neutrality means is that companies can pay internet service providers for priority handling of internet traffic to and from their websites, thus guaranteeing that those with the money can figure out who get what, thus guaranteeing that their websites perform better than those who are unable or unwilling to pay for that sense of prioritization of the traffic. And you can be sure that it won't be long before the government steps in directly with prioritization orders, socially beneficial discrimination. They'll probably even create a bogus court for it, like the FISA court that rubber stamp approves all government requests for spying. So there are petitions for net neutrality, and they're floating around Canada as well as in the States. But if the petition garners 100,000 signatures, which we trust it will do, it'll force the White House to publicly respond to the petition. So there's stuff that I would implore any of my listeners to tend to in this way. Part of the venue of what in God's name is happening. Or as a bumper sticker said, "Where am I going and why am I in this basket?" Our parents used to use the phrase, the world is going to hell in a handbasket. It's quite an interesting compromise of, and an interesting manifestation of the Kali Yuga. Okay, so now let's wander through the fixers of gold. If, in fact, these guys who run the world, the powers that be, we call them, the dark forces, some might be inclined to indicate, if we play the hand that these guys are very smart, it would be absolutely ridiculously naive to think otherwise. And they are inclined to watch what's going down and make contingency plans. We have them seeing the system collapsing, them becoming aware that in the collapse of the system, at some point in time, they have to pull a trigger, they have to begin a process, they have to facilitate another agenda, a contingency plan. And so we talk about now how these bankers or banksters have been doing this for a long time. And I want to wander through how the head of the European bank lied in terms of him wandering through what was happening in the demise of Cyprus, in fact, in the demise of Greece. I mean, Greece prefaced Cyprus. And they were getting quite worried about Greece. But here's a quote from an exchange, okay? So a guy named Scott Solano was talking in an exchange in April of 13, so literally a year ago, 13 months ago. So, Mr. Draghi, I've got a couple of questions from the viewers at Zero Hedge, which is another website that I truly believe is in the agenda of turning the lights on so we can see what's going on. And one of them goes like this. Say the situation in Greece or Spain deteriorates even further and they want to or are forced to step out of the Eurozone. Is there a plan in place so that the markets don't basically collapse? And is there some kind of structural system, structural safety net, especially in the area of derivatives? And I'd like to remind everybody that the area of derivatives right now globally is in the quadrillion dollar range. And the second question is, you spoke earlier about the emergency liquidity assistance and what would have happened to the ELA in Cyprus, the approximately 10 billion euro, if the country had decided to leave that Eurozone. So Draghi steps up in front of the cameras, and it's all recorded now. Well, you really are asking questions that are so hypothetical that I don't have an answer to them. Interesting, right? Well, I may have a partial answer, he then goes on. These questions are formulated by people who vastly underestimate what the euro means for the Europeans, for the euro area. So this is a guy who is from the inner circle, and then he reiterates quite rigorously, they vastly underestimate the amount of political capital that has been invested in the euro. Okay, commentary on that. What he's saying is the powers that be have a huge vested interest in making sure it's all there. However, their vested interest is backstopped and contingency planned up the yin-yang relative to playing the game of what if, okay? And here's what he went on further to say. And so they keep on asking questions like, if the euro breaks down and if a country leaves the euro, it's not like a sliding door. It's a very important thing. It's a project in the European Union. That's why you have a very hard time asking people like me what would happen if. And then he says, no plan B. Okay. Secondly, I think this is him speaking again. Secondly, I think the ECB has shown its determination to fight any denomination risk. And OMT, with its precise rules and acting within its mandate, is there to this purpose. So that's the answer to the first question. The second question was about the ELA, but again, it's related to if Cyprus leaves. And again, we don't have that in mind. So no plan B. Okay. So what gives me great consternation is what turned up later is that there was a group organizing all kinds of contingency plans. Okay, they most certainly had a plan in place, so the markets didn't basically collapse. How could they not? They aren't that stupid. One of the things that I suspect these guys are wandering through in this time and in this era is how incredibly blatantly manipulative they can be without basically being called on it, and how they can bend the rule of law, how they can facilitate nonsensical answers to the sheeple that they're ruling and governing. But in the very same breath, they need to make contingency plans, because God help us that we should not wake up one day and go, hold on, the emperor has no clothes. This is ridiculous. They've been manipulating us. They have been stealing from us. They have created a system where the invisible tax, which is known as inflation, has taken away 99% of the value of our currency. And this is one of the reasons why we propagate and promote and propose that owning gold is an incredible balance to the nonsense that they're going on, okay? Now, this Maria Draghi's response did not seem rational, right? And as I said, the smartest people are just ridiculous. So basically, Mario Draghi was very publicly and officially and on the record lying. And when one of the things that gives us great pause is the complacency that the sheeple have by going, yeah, they all lie anyway. And I've had a conversation with a very intelligent woman in the last year about, yeah, we all know the politicians lie, so what do you do? And then there's also this advent, yeah, you can't fight City Hall. However, there is a point in time in this law of cycles, in this law of periodicity, where the system will collapse. And it is in that imminent collapse. It isn't a function of if it will collapse. It's merely a function of when it will collapse. It happens. It happens over and over and over and over again. It is not a maybe. It is a law that cycles happen and systems happen and political systems that are created by men who are lower self-directed and self-interested to make the system work for their advantage does not have a very long lifespan. We do find out later that there was all kinds of plans in place about Greece exiting. Of course, they had to play all these hands. And we also hear from James Rickard about the currency demise of all of this. I mean, his book has recently come out. So there's a whole bunch of things that we need to be ever mindful about and respectfully, intelligently understanding. Don't stand by and let this nonsense happen. Take action. Now, taking action can be as bold as getting completely out of the system, being involved in a system. Now, we in Canada, and less so in the States, I think the system is in the States is far more compromised, but we in Canada have a system that may be less vulnerable and may be more buffered, but the globe, the world is so intermingled that nobody is immune to the nonsense of what's happening with the ridiculous wealth accumulation and the ridiculous gaming of the system. So let's chat about a few other headlines and highlights, because I want to chat a little about what seems to be going on in the system. And we're just hearing more and more of this. And while I do, on occasion, sound like a bit of a broken record, I do want to point out that as we grow more conscious, we become more responsible for acting in a way that is higher self-serving and lower self-serving. There is something that is a bit paradoxical, and that's when we spoke to and when we teach the engineers of the world, we say, in order for you to facilitate your genius and how it manifests through you, you have to build a skill set, your lower self. You have to build a body and a personality and a mental capacity and an emotional predisposition towards things that will allow your genius to shine through. So you have to be healthy. You have to be in the system, but not of the system, but you have to be actively participating in being aware and being mindful. Okay, so let's chat a little about some other economic things and some comments thereon. So, if you cannot engage in military warfare, which is one of James Rickert's exposés in his first book called Currency Wars, and his other book, it has something to do with the decline of the dollar. How can you declare war? Well, you can declare economic warfare. Now, Russia sends gas to the Ukraine, and in fact precluded the Ukraine from investing capital to design and develop their own gas, because the agenda for the Russians was they can sell their gas into the Ukraine. So Putin right now is informing the EU colleagues on switching to prepaid gas supplies only for the Ukraine come June 1. Okay, there you go. So that's one of the highlights. I want to revisit Jim Rogers, who's, again, been on the show, and hit his proposition that is there are a whole lot of governments who will just go in and take your money. We've spoken of this before. When the governments get low on cash and they realize that the inflationary methodology that they partake in is no longer effective, which the jury's now out, economic quantitative easing is becoming not only ineffective, it is acting in a contrary way. It's one of the reasons why there's been huge suppression observations of the price of gold. Okay, so Rogers says there's going to be chaos in the next decade, and it could be a monetary disaster, and it could even be a war. We have said on occasion that a world war may result of the economic calamity going on, because a world war has, by its very nature, have been started by exasperated, emotionally charged politicians doing really silly things, and then another exasperated, emotionally charged politicians on the other side of the fence responding and reacting in a manner that nobody could have foreseen. Therein is a place that makes us go, good flipping grief, okay? Wars don't start with sound thinking. Okay, so now another headline. We've got the U.S. seeking more than $3.5 billion from BNP Paribas to resolve federal and state investigations into the lenders' dealings with sanctioned countries, including the Sudan and Iran. Ha! So now what you're doing is you've got to pay to play. The U.S. justice system is saying, yeah, okay, if we're gonna let you do that stuff, the penalty is billions and billions of dollars. And it's merely a fine, right? Uncharted territory. It's a bit scary. The other thing that is a bit scary is it's the U.S. judicial system seeking these penalties. For who? Where do these penalties go? Where do these penalties go? Okay, another economic headline that presents itself is how Walmart is starting to miss their targets, starting to slow, starting to decline. And Walmart, in its enormity, is not a bad economic indicator of what's going on, okay? Is not a bad economic indicator of what's going on. Okay, what's happening with food prices? Well, food prices are going up. How could they not go up when you're printing money and the money is chasing things? I went in and bought some beef the other day, and beef is becoming extraordinarily expensive. Unbelievably expensive. Now, China is getting into a fist fight over the war in the Ukraine. We've got Putin and the Chinese playing with each other in a way that I expect is going to raise some eyebrows. So Chinese President Xi Jinping and his Russian counterpart, Putin, will make a substantial statement during Putin's visit. An invitation, at the invitation of the Chinese, Putin will pay a state visit to China and attend a summit of the conference on interaction and confidence-building measures in Asia from May 20th to 21st. That's happening in a couple of days. Vice Foreign Minister said at a press briefing that the two leaders will exchange views on corporate coordinating and international affairs and major issues of common concern. One of the things that presents itself in this title is that the Russians and the Chinese do no longer have the Americans' interest anywhere near their own. Okay, and it's Putin's first tour since Xi or Xi took office in the second meeting between the two presidents this year. There's some bilateral cooperation agreements going on. It's the two other superpowers playing in a game that's a bit scary. As, you know, another headline here is that we have Cambodia friends, citizens of Vietnam, rise up and start to get upset with the Chinese ruling. And we're just the beginning of the end of precious metals manipulation. That's another headline, which we covered, and that's the London gold fix and silver fix is literally being stopped. And that is happening, by the way, in the middle of August, which is a bit auspicious relative to generally the trends and the cycles of these things have a capacity to happen at the end of the summer, right? The Ukraine is just a mess. And world war is beckoning. We have in terms of another headline in here. Another headline in here talks about how the Russians are talking about, and this isn't idle conversation, as James Rickard is wont to say. They're talking about excluding the U.S. dollar as the energy trading de facto currency. Okay, the energy trading de facto currency. It's the loss of its reserve currency status. That starts to happen, and we've spoken about it in the past. As that starts to happen, we see a decline of the Americans being the economic power that they are. Okay. We're seeing some stuff happening here. And where is it that we have today? Again, we now start to bring in the economic manifestation of something that was given us a long time ago about the Iron Age, the selfish, greedy age, and how it cannot carry on. It cannot carry on. And it gives us great pause, and it should give us great opportunity, because the good news is it doesn't happen in 10 minutes. Even though great economic decisions have been made in light of the history of devaluations of currencies, whether it was Mexico or in London some years back, where the government said, nope, 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 and then the next day, yep. Because what they don't want to do is they don't want to run on their currencies. They want to lie to you until it organizes and facilitates their own agenda. So, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the three legs of our stool and what they are, and they were study, meditation, and service. And so I want to readdress that in terms of this topic matter, and that is study what we talk about. Pay attention to the economy. Pay attention to what the politicians are doing. Get quiet and listen. Figure out for yourself in the quiet, in the silence. Because oftentimes the yabber that goes on in your brain isn't necessarily sound thinking. Oftentimes it's tied up with emotion. It's tied up with upset. It's tied up with fear. And the other is service. How can you be of service to yourself, to your own wealth, to your family, to your community? Well, I think there has never been a point in time where sound thinking, mindful, collective, collaborative thinking has proven to be contrary to the correct or right or proper way to act. What we now have is a whole bunch of self-serving individuals running around not paying attention to the good old phrase of as go we, so go I. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we will have a short program today. And I thank you very much for allowing me to be of service. I thank you for allowing this program to be listened to by my leaders or my listeners. And I would implore you to reach out and figure out what you might be able to do in order to have your voice heard about the compromise of the internet. Speak up about net neutrality. Speak up about not having the powers that be skew the internet to their advantage in order to facilitate information flow to you. Let us push forward on that one. And with that, This is Jeff Dunphy. We are retooling for our coming of age. And I say to you again, as always, thank you.